This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
This is Eben Fowler with VOD Radio Network sitting in today for Tony. Glad to do it. It's been at least a couple of 3 weeks since I've been here. Kind of missed it. And I am glad to be here with you this afternoon. My goodness, by golly, boys and girls, we've got a great lineup today. Interesting topics for sure. And it's going to be an action-packed, interesting program. So first of all, we're going to be talking with Congressman Ralph Abraham of Louisiana. He'll be here with his appraisal of the U.S. withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord. And if you think the mainstream media was upset before yesterday, you ain't seen nothing yet. We'll be talking about that. We'll hear a little bit of audio from yesterday's press conference as well. And apparently the U.S. will keep its embassy in Tel Aviv for now and not relocate to Jerusalem. Susan Michael, whom we've talked with in the past, she's the director of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem. She'll share her thoughts on that announcement. And it seems that believing marriage between one man and one woman will ban you from selling fruit at a Michigan farmer's market. We'll talk with Steve Tennis, owner of Country Mill Farms, and his attorney, Jeremy Tedesco. He's with the Alliance Defending Freedom. Once again, it's another kooky story, but you need to hear it. And finally, we'll talk with Dr. Bruce Kirk, founding dean of the School of Communication and Digital Content at Liberty University, about the state of journalism in America. And if you haven't heard the interview that was done with John Sununu on CNN just a few days ago, you're not going to want to miss this. That's in our last segment. We're going to play some of that interview, and then Dr. Kirk will comment on that as well as the whole state of journalism in America. So anyway, as I said, as I promised, an action-packed program. Well, let's get started here. Yesterday, President Trump announced that the U.S. is pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. What a wonderful day it was yesterday, by the way. The president spoke by phone with the leaders of Germany, France, Canada, and the United Kingdom, and he reassured them that the U.S. is committed to, quote, robust efforts to protect the environment, and noted America's record in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. As you can imagine, the left has come unhinged with this decision. Heads are exploding across the fruited plains. And I want to play a montage of what the president said at his press conference in the Rose Garden yesterday. Here it is.
In order to fulfill my solemn duty to protect America and its citizens, the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord, begin negotiations to re-enter either the Paris Accord or in really entirely new transaction on terms that are fair to the United States. So we're getting out, but we will start to negotiate and we will see if we can make a deal that's fair. And if we can, that's great. And if we can't, that's fine. The Paris Climate Accord is simply the latest example of Washington entering into an agreement that disadvantages the United States to the exclusive benefit of other countries. I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
From yesterday's press conference in the White House Rose Garden, President Trump speaking there, of course. Well, joining us on Washington Watch now is Congressman Ralph Abraham. He represents the 5th District of Louisiana. He also serves on the Environment Subcommittee. Welcome to the broadcast today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, you know, it's been 24 hours since President Trump's announcement. What are some of your thoughts on what it means for the United States and also about the apparent meltdown, the continued meltdown, shall we say, of the left, particularly the media?
The media is going to continue to do everything they can to disparage President Trump and Vice President Pence and basically his whole administration. So, you know, I don't get too caught up in that because that's not going to change foreseeably in the next 4 years and hopefully 8 years. Now, as far as withdrawing from the Paris climate deal, I'm glad he did. This was a very smoke and mirror way of really only income redistribution. Take from us in America and give to other countries that are mismanaged. They don't have any climate control, any idea of what to do and give them literally $100 billion a year with no oversight. Now, I would bet my last quarter that the money that we would have given them would not have gone to anything good. It would have gone to line the pockets of some very nefarious people in those countries, and the people that would potentially receive any benefit would never see a dime of that money. So I was glad to see the president do what he did. I don't want the UN in any form or fashion controlling the purse strings of what we do in America. They're not very efficient, and they're not very good at anything they do.
Well, Congressman, you know, there, I don't know if you remember this, but back earlier in my youth days, there was a song and it had kind of a lyric in the chorus. It's just something about you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And that applies to this Paris Climate Accord. You know, it sounds, if you happen to be one of the true believers in the religion of climate change, you know, climate changes all the time, but, you know, global warming, and now they're calling it climate change, et cetera.
That's right, because, that's exactly right. Like, redefine the wording.
Well, you kind of have to, you know, when you're found out, of course. But,
that's,
you know,
right.
The thing is, as I was doing some reading earlier in the week, you know, as we were getting up to this press conference where the president announced that we are pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, you know, and then it sounds so good. Oh, we're going to save the environment. We're going to save the climate. But I have to confess, I wasn't really that aware of some of the peculiarities and particularities of that agreement. But as I read some articles that at least in part analyzed what it was going to do to us, I was flabbergasted. So, you know, and you alluded to some of it, a big transfer of wealth. And when you said the last quarter in your pocket, that might be what would have happened had this thing gone through. Tell us a little bit more about some of the stuff in the underbelly of the Paris Climate Accord that maybe most people were not aware of.
The under-the-radar stuff that is in the, again, this was in an executive agreement. It was not a treaty because the President Obama knew that he didn't have any chance of getting it passed through the Senate. So therefore, he did what he often did, just took the law basically into his own hand and said, it's going to be my way or the highway. What this deal would have done would have been to require the United States to meet unattainable emission standards by 2020, but China and other countries that signed onto the agreement would not have to have done anything until 2030. So they could have burned whatever they wanted to, as much as they wanted to, for basically as long as they wanted to, and there was no recourse whatsoever that we had over them. So, again, the President Trump was right. This was a deal that was bad from the get-go, got worse as you had more of it. And, again, I'm very thankful that he and Vice President Pence had the courage, because they knew they were going to get beat up horrifically by the media, but they had the wherewithal to stand the ground, do what they said they were going to do in the campaign, and basically save us in America from going bankrupt. This deal would have bankrupted the country even more than it is now.
Well, there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal editorial section today, and I didn't bring it in the studio with me. But one of the things that it talked about was the fact that we have been doing a great job in improving, you know, again, this is assuming that what they call greenhouse gases are harmful, CO2. CO2 is what makes trees and plants really happy. And, you know, they failed to mention that. But what this article in part talked about was the fact that because of technology and innovation and because of the things that our innovative people are doing here in the United States, we have been able to reduce pollution without any kind of an international climate accord. I mean, is that true up with what you understand?
Exactly right. Our industries now are much, much cleaner than they were even 10 or 15 years ago. The technology is phenomenal. So, you know, they're doing a wonderful job. We all want clean air. We all want clean water. We've got that. But, I mean, you know, just a volcano eruption puts more of the ozone and the CO2 in the atmosphere than all the combined industrial countries of the world in the course of a year. And you're right. CO2, if I remember my junior high chemistry, right, when we talked about photosynthesis, If you take 6 molecules of CO2 and 6 molecules of water, you end up with a molecule of sugar and 6 molecules of oxygen, if my chemistry is remotely right. So what they have done historically with what they call now, as you said, climate change, not global warming, because there has been no global warming in the last 18 years, is they have put out the name of what they call the social cost of climate change. Well, there is no social cost of climate change. It's just a bunch of, again, smoke and mirrors that they're throwing up. This, believe it or not, always comes back to the money. Whether we are redistributing our income to other countries, again, where there's no oversight, or whether companies that maybe some of these, left people own, where you have to buy carbon units, this goes back to the almighty dollar. It has nothing to do with just good, normal, hard science. You start arguing the hard science with some of these people, as I have done on this Science and Space Technology Committee, which I'm part of, and they just cannot debate the facts. This is a true case of facts get in the way.
Well, and what I was mentioning earlier about the fact that it's a strong economy that is able to support to the development of technology that helps us to get where we are now with the advances we've made in terms of reducing pollution. And the thing that is interesting is that an agreement like this Paris Accord would actually be counterproductive, I believe, because if it's sucking capital out of, say, our economy, which it would have done, then that's capital that would not have been used to develop this new technology. So it's kind of circular there. They're actually...
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That's a very good point. That's very true.
Yeah, I mean, in the real world, which unfortunately most of the people that get involved in these kind of agreements don't live in the real world, if you let companies innovate, technologies develop, good things happen, and we've actually seen that. Well, let me turn a corner here for just a minute, because we've got just about another minute to go here. The nation's unemployment rate fell 0.1% to 4.3%. That's the lowest jobless rate in 16 years. Any thoughts on that, briefly?
Oh, yes, indeed. I saw those numbers. That was actually in the Wall Street Journal this morning also. And if you look at last month's number of jobs that were gained, I think that was a record number in the last 10 or 12 years. So the economy is marching certainly in the right direction. And you've got to give the credit where the credit is due. And this goes back to the President Trump and his administration. He is pushing jobs. What he is touting is giving confidence to these global companies that are bringing their manufacturing, their industry back into the United States. And that bodes well for job creation.
Absolutely.
I'm glad to see the numbers. I think they're going to get better and better as time goes along.
That's right. Well, what a difference an election makes. Well, Congressman Ralph Abraham.
Elections have consequences.
That's right. Keep up the good work. Keep having those debates using actual scientific facts. And thank you for serving.
Thank you so much for having me. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Coming up next, it looks like the U.S. Embassy in Israel will remain in Tel Aviv for now. Susan Michael, director of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, will be here in just a couple of minutes with her reaction to that. We'll also have an opportunity toward the last segment of the program, for your phone calls. Stay with us. We've got great stuff coming up.
Imagine being threatened by the government for reading a magazine article. This is exactly what Don Vanderboon, owner of the West Michigan Beef Company, experienced when USDA inspectors threatened to shut down his operation because of reading material that they found in his company break room, which defended biblical marriage. Mr. Vanderboon's employees were well aware of the material and of the company's publicly stated Christian principles and had no objections. As we all know, religious liberty is an indelible thread woven into the fabric of America. Without it, the American experiment will fail. Yet time and time again, the freedom of Americans to believe and live out those beliefs has been attacked by government action. Now more than ever, our first freedom of religious liberty needs protection. Watch a special program hosted by FRC President Tony Perkins, where you'll hear from real people whose freedom to believe has been affected in real ways, including Mr. Vanderboon himself. Go to frc.org/believe to watch this special presentation.
In the book of Isaiah, the word tells us, "The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever." In the same way, without careful planning, your financial goals could blow away like the seeds of a dandelion. It's never too early or too late to consider how a charitable gift annuity can help you meet the financial goals you've set for your loved ones, your causes, and yourself. Give AFA Foundation a call at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website, afafoundation.net. Let us explain how a charitable gift annuity can help you achieve your goals. As we read in Proverbs, "The plans of the diligent lead to profit." Our phone number again is 800-326-4543, extension 345, and our website is afafoundation.net.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler here from Bot Radio Network, sitting in guest hosting for Tony Perkins today, who is on the road. And it's great to have you listening today. Well, second segment here, the U.S. Embassy in Israel isn't moving from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem in the near future. The White House today says President Trump has signed a six-month extension to a waiver delaying that relocation. With us on the line now is Susan Michael, director of the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem, I almost said Washington, who has weighed in before on this topic. Welcome back to Washington Watch, Susan.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be with you today.
Well, first of all, bring us up to date, kind of educate us on what the White House is saying, and also why it's an important thing to move this to Jerusalem, move the embassy.
Well, you know, Evan, the U.S. Congress passed a law in 1995 declaring Jerusalem to be the capital of Israel and calling for the embassy, the United States embassy, to be located in Jerusalem. And since then, every 6 months, no matter who's president, they have signed a waiver waiving the implementation of that for 6 months based on national security concerns. Donald Trump campaigned on one promise, one of several promises that a lot of our evangelical voters were appreciative of and voted accordingly, was that he would move the embassy to Jerusalem. And he came into office saying he was going to move it, but within just a couple of months, we noticed the tone changing, that, well, we're considering moving it. The reason it's so important that the United States recognize Jerusalem as the capital and put our embassy there is because Israel is the only country in the world that we don't recognize their capital and place our embassy there. And yet they are our strongest ally, the most democratic country in the entire Middle East. Their people love America. They've got our back. We share intelligence with them and military training. Yet we're not recognizing their capital. So this is injustice that needs to be corrected. And, you know, there's many reasons why that this embassy needs to be relocated, and there's excuses against it, but honestly, this is the time to do it. This president has more political leverage than any president has had for years in the Middle East. And all he has to do is tell the Arab leaders, this is what I'm going to do, and I don't want you to oppose me, but in return, I'm going to help you against Iran. And that's what they all want, and he'll be able to do it. But unfortunately, we're going to have to wait another 6 months to give him that opportunity again.
Well, obviously, Israel, you know, is in favor of this. And their argument to the administration, as I understand it, is that moving the embassy would both correct a historical anomaly whereby the United States doesn't recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. So it would correct that. And it would also force the Arabs and Palestinians to wake up from a long-harbored fantasy that they could disassociate Israel and the Jewish people from Jerusalem. Is that fairly accurate? What are your thoughts?
Well, yes. I think the main reason Trump signed the waiver was to give the opportunity for peace negotiations to begin between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And the danger in here is that for 24 years, we have been trying to get peace negotiations with the Palestinians. And they're not coming to the table. They're not serious because of this fantasy that you're talking about, where they think that one day there will be no Israel and they will have it all, everything from the Jordan to the sea. And it's time for them to wake up and to realize that that's not going to happen. Israel's here to stay. And they need to come to the table and begin to compromise and begin to prepare their people for peace and change their tone. And my argument to the president and to those that say, you know, give the peace negotiations a try, my argument, and I think Israel agrees, is there's no better way to get the Palestinians to the negotiating table than to move the embassy to Jerusalem and give the very clear message, the longer they wait, they're going to lose ground. And strength speaks in the Middle East. They'll come to the table then.
So, you know, you wonder is, and you, sir, I was going to ask you that question, but it seems that maybe this is because Donald Trump is a negotiator, that perhaps he's sort of looking at the landscape, looking at the history, and perhaps looking at this as a negotiating point. What do you think?
Well, he sees himself as, you know, the ultimate deal maker. And I think he sees this as the ultimate deal to be made. And he would very much like to go down in history as the president that solved the Israeli-Palestinian crises. And so, yes, he's going to give it his all. And this delay is so that he has time to get them to the table. You know, I think that there were some encouraging things when he was in Israel that he never mentioned the term Palestinian statehood, and he never mentioned the two-state solution. And I think maybe what he has in mind as an outcome is different than what our previous administrations have had in mind. It may not be complete Palestinian statehood, and it may not be a two-state solution. That's the big question, and I guess we'll be finding that out.
So how much contact do you have with folks in Israel and in Jerusalem in particular, and what are they saying to you?
Well, Evan, our headquarters is in Jerusalem, so we are in very, very close contact with the Israelis. And I think that, you know, look, it's double. First of all, they're disappointed, just as we were here in the United States, very disappointed that he didn't come through with his promise. But at the same time, they understand he doesn't want to rock the boat. And so I think they're really willing to give him a second chance, give him the 6 months, see what it will produce. But they want to see the United States Embassy in Jerusalem because it demonstrates that we recognize Jerusalem as the eternal and never to be divided again capital of the State of Israel.
Well, Susan Michaels, Director of the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem. Thanks so much, Susan. Good having you on the broadcast again.
Great to be with you.
Well, up next, a fruit farmer in Michigan is being blocked from selling at a local farmer's market. You won't believe the reason why. Steve Tennis, owner of Country Mill Farms, and Jeremy Tedesco. He's the senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, and he is Steve's attorney. We'll be up next, and then we'll have a great segment. Our final segment, we'll be talking about journalism. Whatever happened to it? And we'll be listening to a really interesting interchange between John Sununu and a CNN interviewer. Coming up next on Washington Watch.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like we got confirmation on something I've been talking about for quite some time. I'm not alone. A lot of people have been talking about it. I've been writing about it, and that is tax reform and how important it really is. Well, we got job numbers out. And by the way, out of about 100 economists that have been polled about job numbers, every single one of them had private sector jobs coming in higher than the actual number we got. We got 138,000. And by the way, just for the record, I had predicted somewhere around 200,000. We saw an ADP number earlier in the week that was well over 200,000. Not only is this a poor report, but it revised last month's report downward to 174,000 from 211. The unemployment rate went down to 4.3%, and the labor participation rate goes down to a level we haven't seen since December. Still locked away in 1978. This is not a good number, and this is affirmation that we had better get the legislative process working. Oh, wait a minute. They're all on break. Yeah. So we've got 40 days between now and September 30th for both the House of Representatives and the Senate to be working. It's probably impossible yet, by all indications, even in the midst of some of the great positive numbers we've gotten this week, we have got to get to tax reform.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler from Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Well, Country Mill Farms is a second-generation family business that grows apples, blueberries, peaches, cherries, sweet corn, and pumpkins. They host a number of community events, including some Michigan fall favorites, a corn maze, a petting zoo, apple picking, and hay rides. Good fun stuff that so it makes it a real family-friendly business. Well, for the last 7 years, Country Mill Farms has set up a booth at the East Lansing, Michigan Farmers Market to sell their produce, offering the only stand with organic apples. Love those apples. But this year, Country Mill was not invited back. And here to tell us why is Steve Tennis. He's the owner of Country Mill Farms, and his attorney, Jeremy Tedesco, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. Gentlemen, thank you for getting with us here on Washington Watch today.
Thanks very much.
Well, let's start with you, Steve. Tell us the story of what happened.
Well, for the last 7 years, we've packed up our blueberries and peaches and driven 22 miles into the city of East Lansing, about, and selling to people of all backgrounds, all beliefs, including those that identify with the LGBT community. And we had a great relationship with our customers, good relationship with the city of East Lansing. In fact, as of August of 2016, City of East Lansing officials posted on their Facebook page, and I quote, "We love the Country Mill."
Well, until recently, anyway.
Yeah, that praise in August 2016 quickly ended that same month when they learned about a response that I had posted into an inquiry that someone asked us on our Facebook page, and where I stated our beliefs on traditional marriage. And immediately and strongly, the city of East Lansing began pressuring us not to come back to the farmers market that very weekend. Ultimately, they developed a new policy specifically to bar our farm because of our faith from the farmers market.
Well, you know, that sounds an awful lot like a First Amendment thing. You know, you should have a right to say whatever you want, even if they may not agree with it. That's kind of what the First Amendment is all about. So, Jeremy, you're the attorney in this case. How did you get involved? And give us kind of an update on where things are at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's not kind of a First Amendment thing. It's a clear-cut First Amendment violation. You know, the city has targeted Steve and his family because of their religious beliefs and excluded them from the social and community life of the city of East Lansing simply because of their religious beliefs. And you know, one of the more audacious things about what the city is doing here is they're actually reaching outside of their own jurisdiction. They can only regulate what happens in their own city under state law. So they don't have any jurisdiction over Steve and his farm 22 miles outside the city. But they so dislike his views about marriage and the fact that he tried to live his life according to them that they've created a policy to try to circumvent the limits on their own authority so they can punish Steve and Country Mill. And so it's really quite amazing. And the way the city is operating here would put everybody at risk. I mean, religious institutions, churches, any other business owners or individuals who hold the same beliefs and live their lives according to this belief about marriage could be excluded from a whole slew of different things in the city of East Lansing, including renting facilities and city buildings, public parks and streets. I mean, it's really quite amazing that the city thinks it has the authority to just punish people who have views that they don't like.
Well, you know, and I read a little bit about this story, and apparently, Steve, even after they said, you all can't display your wares at our farmer's market, you went ahead and came anyway. And then they went and they created yet another ordinance, I guess, that further barred you. In fact, it said, as you had mentioned, Jeremy, that, you can't even hold these views outside the farmer's market or outside the city of Lansing. That seems absolutely nuts. What do you think about that, Steve?
You know, my wife and I, we both volunteered to serve our country in the military. Never in a million years did we think when we returned home that we would have to start fighting for our own freedom right here in our own backyard for our children and our grandchildren.
It's amazing.
True tolerance is a two-way street. I hope and I really sincerely do pray that the city of East Lansing officials can change their hearts and change their policies.
Well, Jeremy, we have just about a minute. Tell us where the case is going. What actions are you taking? And by the way, we really appreciate what Alliance Defending Freedom does. And it's amazing that in this day and age that we have to fight silly battles like this. But so how are you going to smack this thing down?
Well, we filed a federal civil rights lawsuit this week. That starts the process. We'll be filing a motion for preliminary injunction very soon to try to get an injunction quickly to stop this discrimination and allow Country Mill to participate as they have every other year for the past 7 years. But ultimately, these things seem silly, and they seem like, why would the city do this? And this seems outlandish. But look, this story is being told again and again in communities across the country.
That's right.
We have a crisis in our country where First Amendment rights are being attacked and restricted over and over because Christians simply want to continue to believe and order their lives around the belief that marriage is between a man and a woman. And that belief is useless if you can't act on it, if you can't live by it. It doesn't really help you to have beliefs that have to stay in your head.
Makes you shake your head. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Steve Tennis, owner of Country Mill Farms, Jeremy Tedesco with Alliance Defending Freedom. Folks, let's pray for this case and many, many others that ADF and other organizations are working on to protect your religious freedom. Well, coming up next, do you miss the days when stories were reported fairly? Well, you're not alone. Dr. Bruce Kirk, Liberty University founding dean of the School of Communication and Digital Content, will be here after the break to discuss the state of journalism in America. And I'm also going to play for you an incredible clip. It's an interview with John Sununu with a CNN anchor reporter. I'm not sure what you call her, but don't miss it.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Join Frank Turek, Richard Land, Norman Geisler, Greg Kokel, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy here to help you understand God's purpose for your life through the eyes of a layman. I had a good friend on the opposite side of the country who came down with cancer. He was a great guy that had nothing to do with God, and I felt God's nudge to go talk with him, but I didn't. I had good intentions, but my busy life kept me distracted, and he died surprisingly fast. I was devastated. I was overwhelmed by guilt as I went to his funeral and sat in the service until the pastor said he was introduced to my friend because of his cancer and led him to the Lord. That's when tears broke forth as I thanked God for getting me off the hook, and I promised I wouldn't let him down again. All of us are held responsible for the lives we influence. Indeed, we are our brother's keeper. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everyone you're with today closer to Jesus. If you want to know how easy that is, go to ROTW.com.
You are listening to the Washington Watch broadcast. Eben Fowler from Bot Radio Network sitting in as guest host today for Tony Perkins. Glad you are along. You're going to love this next segment. Well, you know, each week it seems there's another mainstream media meltdown in response to the Trump administration. Yesterday, we saw their response to, and it's ongoing, to Trump's announcement that the U.S. is pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. And a few days ago, former George H.W. Bush White House Chief of Staff John Sununu, many of you may remember that name, Mr. Sununu called out CNN's Allison Camerota for having a collusion agenda. I'm going to play that clip here in just a second. But first of all, I want to give you our call-in phone number because we want you to get involved in the conversation. It's 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We want to talk about the content that you're just about to hear. So, Brent, if you would go ahead, this clip is about 3 minutes long, but it is worth the time. This is John Sununu with CNN's Allison Camerota.
So Jared Kushner meeting with a major Russian banker of a massive bank that has connections to Vladimir Putin. Nothing to see there.
Well, tell me what you think is to see there, and I'll comment on it.
What do you think would be the motivation?
I don't think there's anything there.
So why would they do it?
Because during the 10 weeks, everybody is trying to meet somebody who's going to be in the administration. Mm-hmm. Everybody who's involved in business, everybody who's involved in politics. I can't tell you how many people tried to meet with me
Did you meet with a Russian banker when everybody tried to meet with you?
No, but I had breakfast with the vice president at the Russian embassy, and a lot of folks there started talking to me.
Mm-hmm. And would you have carved out time to meet with a Russian banker with ties to Vladimir Putin if he asked?
I'm not even sure what would have happened if that had happened. First of all, Putin wasn't there. But look, you're asking hypotheticals on hypotheticals.
Well, I'm trying actually take your temperature. I'm trying to gauge your comfort level with all of this.
My comfort level, the only discomfort I have is with folks in the media trying to create a veniality without having the courage to specifically tell me what the veniality that I should be concerned about is.
Well,
I have not identified a veniality. Have you?
Well, you should be concerned if there was collusion. And that's what
I don't see any evidence of collusion. Do you?
No.
That should end your reporting right there.
We're
you
at
should
the
put
beginning
an exclamation point after you know.
Understood. But we're at the beginning of the investigation. So what
you're
Congress,
7 months the, into the investigation.
Not exactly.
You're
Robert
7 months.
Mueller has just taken over. Robert Mueller has just taken over.
It's a new investigation.
Well, no. I mean, look, that's not exactly fair, Governor, because as you know, Congress people have been
investigation
calling for a
went
special
on
counsel
for the last...
to do this, to handle this, because so it gets away from all of the partisan bickering. So it's just starting in that regard.
Can I ask a question? If Mueller comes out and says that my version is correct and yours isn't, how much crow are you going to eat?
Governor, I don't have a version of events.
Of course you do. The whole half hour I listened to is a version.
Governor, we are asking questions of the sources of the people who know, attempting to see where the investigation is. The investigation isn't complete.
Without identifying a veniality that should be investigated.
Governor, we appreciate your perspective that there's nothing to see here. And that the investigation is, I don't know, silly?
Politically motivated by folks trying to rationalize a horribly run Democratic presidential campaign.
Governor John Sununu, thank you very much. Always great to get your perspective.
Oh, wasn't that fun? Allison. Did you meet with a Russian banker? She asked several times. Oh, really? Well, with us now is Dr. Bruce Kirk. He is the founding dean of the School of Communication and Digital Content at Liberty University. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Evan. Good to be with you.
Well, had you seen or heard that exchange before we just played it here today?
Yes, I did, sadly, and I must say, having spent 33 years in journalism before I came to academia, I'm ashamed, I'm disappointed, I'm saddened to see that a journalist would take that approach. Governor Sununu hit it on the head. Hypothetical upon hypothetical, there's nothing there, nobody has seen anything, nobody has anything to offer, and she admits she sees no evidence of collusion, and to his point, then let's put an exclamation point there and let's drop that line of questions and let's move on. But there's a narrative that's out there, and unfortunately it appears the media on the left is clearly going to drive that narrative because of what they've been told, and they are convinced there must be something there.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. And Dr. Kirk, if I could get you to speak up just a little bit more, that would be helpful.
Sure.
We talk about journalism. I tune in CNN, at least for the last month or two. I kind of pop over there and listen, unfortunately, for a sad laugh, because the word that is most uttered on that network and others as well, but CNN is a prime example, is Russia. It's everything Russia. And in fact, there was an article this morning that was written by someone that I consider to be a real journalist. That's Kimberly Strassel with the Wall Street Journal, where she was making that very point, is that you hear every other story is Russia, 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 but they're missing talking about really other important things that are going on. What has happened? I mean, I think we all kind of know, but from your perspective as a journalism professor, what's going on with our media?
Well, I think one of the things that Governor Sununu said to her is that she has what appears to be her version of events. And so many journalists, I think, have come up with their version, their narrative of what they think the events are. She says she doesn't have a version of events. But if you listen to most of these journalists, Evan, what you hear is they do have a version, and they're trying to drive that forward. And it seems to me that we've gotten away from the basics, which are the facts. If you have the facts, then deal with them. If you don't have the facts, why don't we wait till those facts come out and then we can discuss what they are. When I came through journalism, and what we teach our students is you follow the facts, you follow the information. When you have the facts, you report it. If you don't have them, you don't speculate.
And let me repeat our phone number, 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234 if you want to join the conversation here in just a few minutes. And by the way, Dr. Kirk, it was interesting. We were going to try to get John Sununu on the line here to talk with us and weren't able to connect with him. But then he did call back, called our producer back and said, once we told him what we were going to be doing, he said, well, I'm going to listen. So shout out here for John Sununu. That was if you're listening, you did a phenomenal job dealing with that so-called journalist. And we appreciate you standing up for the truth. Well, you know, as a journalism professor, let me ask you this first. I've got a few factoids here. There's a 2016 report by Politico, which is not exactly a journalistic jewel. They say not a single member of the White House press corps is a registered Republican. Only 7% of journalists identify as Republicans. More than 90% of D.C. journalists vote Democratic, with an even higher number giving to Democrats or liberal-leaning political action committees. So how did that happen? Why are we getting journalists, and I use that with I'm holding my fingers up and making quotes in the air, journalists, why are we getting that lopsided kind of thing in our journalists?
You know, there's probably a myriad of reasons, Evan. I think over the course of time, sadly, the visual media, and I was in television for decades, I think it's taken over the glamour side of it, has taken over the fact side of it. And I think the hard work of journalism, of really digging for the facts and having something to deal with rather than speculating, as I mentioned a moment ago, rather than drawing my own narrative, I think that's become the driver. And I think that's just sad. I want to share one quick thing that is sort of related to this, and I don't mean to pick on a man while he's down, but Scott Pelley, who, as we know, has just been removed from CBS News as an anchor, is still on 60 Minutes. And he did a segment here just a little while back about fake news. And here's what he said in the opening segment about fake news. He says the term fake news has been used by Trump, I want to come back to that in a second, to discredit responsible reporting that he dislikes. Well, first thing I would say is, as a journalist, I would never have referred to the four presidents that I spoke to by their last name. A courtesy would tell you it's President Trump, it's Mr. Trump, it's never just Trump. But number two, listen to the ways that he wrote that. The news has been used by Trump to discredit responsible reporting. Who defines responsible reporting? Well, in this
so-called
case, obviously, Scott Pelley. Right.
Yeah.
He says it's responsible. It's like, well, is that really responsible, or is that your version of it?
Now, let me ask you a question. I heard recently on a talk radio broadcast a host who is a former CNN journalist, actually, read through an article and sort of was giving us a journalism 101 course, if you will. He was reading through this. It was either the New York Times or the Washington Post, obviously. And he was going through and sort of he had highlighted the references to sources in that article. There was not a single named source in that article. Mm-hmm. It was all, former administration sources, this, that, and the other, but there was never a named source. As a journalism professor, what do you teach your students to do when they're writing an article with respect
to
sources?
Thing. Whether it's an article or whether it's on radio or whether it's in television, we're teaching our journalists, I can tell you, we still stick to the two-source rule, which is the rule that I was taught very early on in my career. And I want two real sources that I can point to. I want two people that I can see and touch. I don't want to go with unnamed sources. I would agree. I think that as a public, we have really grown tired of that because we don't know who they're talking about. Who are these people? How do I verify who they are? So, yeah, I think the sources is a huge part of that, and we're hiding behind that as journalists, sadly. And I think there's where part of the problem lies.
Well, you know, and if we're not listening, reading, and viewing critically and paying attention to those, and those aren't really nuances, those are fairly obvious things. If we have our thinking caps on and if we're tuned in and we're listening, you know, that two source, and you're talking about two named sources that are on the record, correct?
That is absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Look, there's no place for opinions, and I think that's where we have gotten into, especially, and this is a bit of an indictment for 24-hour, you know, cable news.
Right.
But because they're trying to fill so much content, we've gotten into speculation, we've gotten into opinion journalism, we've gotten to a place where, you know, we're not reporting what we know. We're speculating. We're creating our own narrative. And you can do that all day long, but it doesn't mean that you're factually correct.
And that's what they are doing all day long. And as you said, the 24-hour news cycle, I was going to bring that up, seems to be one of the reasons that journalism has strayed way, way off the reservation, at least. It seems to be the case. Our number, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Dr. Kirk, I'm going to bring Mark on from Missouri. He'd like to chime in on the conversation. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. My question is, media seems to be focusing on hypotheticals and speculations and things like that. Why is that so important to them versus potentially illegal and definite acts that have been taken effect, like with Clinton emails and all kinds of other things, leaks and all these other things? Why do they focus on the nebulous rather than the stuff that's actually happened?
Good question, well, Dr.
I would. It's a great question. I'd give you one response, which is an old adage that we still teach in my journalism programs at Liberty University, and that is, I want to be first, but, comma, I want the facts first. And I think too many organizations want to be first. So to answer your question, they're doing it as a race to the gate to show that they've got the latest nugget, whether they verified it or not, whether they can back it up or not. And I think that's really sloppy journalism. I don't want to be first. I want to be right first. So let me get the facts right, then I'll do it. I did a story years ago when I was working in Detroit, and I wasn't the first one on the air. I'll never forget coming back to my newsroom, and my boss pulling me aside and just screaming up one side and down the other when I said I didn't have all the facts. I won't use the words he used, but basically it was, I don't care about the facts. I want to be first. And I think there's a lot of that mentality that still exists today.
Well, I'm sure there is. Well, so you're in the classroom a lot, you probably oversee other professors who are teaching journalism. Tell us what you're doing to prepare students at Liberty University to be real journalists.
Well, our mantra at Liberty is raising champions for Christ, and I think the thing that we're doing the most, Evan, is we're sticking to honesty, we're sticking to integrity. Morals and values matter. The truth absolutely matters, so follow the facts, don't speculate, don't draw conclusions on your own. If you can't back it up, I don't want to report it, I don't want to hear it. I want to know what the facts are, and again, if that means I'm going to be second or third to the gate, so be it. But I want it to be accurate before I'm ever going to go out there and try to print or broadcast something that I can't back up. Because you mentioned it a moment ago, Evan, there's going to come a day and time when you're going to end up in court. There's going to come a day or time when you have to defend that. And if you can't, you're in deep trouble.
Well, you know, it seems like one of the things that would help is if the consumers of this news could actually be trained to be able to appreciate good journalism again. And I don't know. My guess is that with all of this junk that's coming out of a lot of these news organizations, and that I would exempt very few from that description. I think, at least, except for those perhaps who have the same perspective as most of these journalists, people are really getting sick and tired of this stuff. And it'd be nice if there was a way that people would just say, you know what, I'm not going to listen to this anymore until you people actually do journalism. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea. And I'll tell you what, I think what I've been interested to watch, and I'll be curious to see as we go forward, is what's the White House going to do with these daily press briefings? They've turned into a circus, and they have now gone to a place where they're saying, okay, you know what? We're just going to do an audio feed. We're not going to let you go on camera and make a mockery of this so you can get your 15 seconds of fame. We're going to make this only fact-driven. Or here's another choice. We'll wait until we have the information, and then the president will send out a press release. There's nothing that says the media has to be given that instant access, and if they're going to abuse it, and they're not going to respect the privilege. And frankly, I will tell you, respect the process and the person in the office. I was appalled to hear the tone of anger and frustration in Allison's approach to Governor Sununu.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Kirk, we're going to have to jump out. We're at the end of the program. Thank you so much for taking time today. We appreciate it very much.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.
That's 1-866-372-7234.